Hello and welcome to episode 45 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and I'm joined by Fiona Campbell-Howes, founder and lead copywriter at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And Radix's creative director, David Maguire.
Hello and happy new year, if it's not now obscenely late to say so.
In this episode, we are visiting one of the less frequently discussed location for content in the marketing and sales funnel, though more so for the marketing side of things, sort of like the bottom of what we kind of deal with. That's right, we're going to be talking about Bofu content, the content that lives away from the glitz and the glam at the top of the funnel, the content that's there when you need to persuade someone to say yes. So why are we talking about Bofu? Fiona, David?
Well, no one else is, as far as I can make out, and I think that this is the thing that, particularly, you know, when we were talking about the Content Marketing Institute's trends for 2017, it just seems that what everyone thinks of as content marketing is just kind of ebbing away to the top of the funnel. It's all about awareness and building audience, and not a whole lot about getting people to do stuff that makes you money.
That kind of thing that helps the salespeople.
Yeah, the sort of stuff that keeps us all in a job. And people don't talk about that stuff. I mean, later, we were going to do a section with, you know, what the listeners think are their favourite pieces of Bofu content. And we asked them, and tumbleweed. It's like nobody ever has any favourite pieces of Bofu content, except us.
Yeah, and it's because this is the unsexy content, isn't it, from the kind of industry's point of view. So, you know, you can do all the, like, really, well, as you say, sort of glitzy and glamorous, like slideshares and thought leadership and sort of visionary stuff at the top of the funnel. Everyone loves that. And then, you know, at the bottom of the funnel, what we're going to be talking about today is the kind of really practical, useful, helpful stuff that actually persuades somebody to make a decision. And, you know, that's so important. This is like the really important part of the funnel, as far as I'm concerned. And you're right, nobody really talks about it.
Because the fluff is so much more... That's not fluff. That's harsh.
But it's glitzy and glamorous.
Yeah, it is. And it's glitzy and glamorous. But I wonder if there's also an aspect where that kind of really early stuff... It's all kind of above the line, below the line thing. But that early stuff... The metrics for it are all so much more vague and sort of vanity-based,
aren't
they?
Yeah, they're very, very, very vanity-based.
You know, so it's very easy to go, oh, well, you know, this gave us good awareness, or this gave us lots of eyeballs, you know, because is it sexy, but is it also less scary for marketers than to talk about, did anybody buy anything? Did we get any real sales opportunities out of it?
I think part of the issue, though, is also that if you look at marketing awards across the industry, most of it is focusing on top-level content. You don't tend to get people talking about what's worked. There's no awards for kind of like best white paper.
Yes, I mean, a lot of the awards do look at the really creative stuff, you know.
Yeah, but but nobody's kind of bigging up generally in the industry the stuff that actually gets people results, the stuff that people can really learn from now, because we've kind of perfected top quite a bit over the last insert how many years.
Yeah.
We should start an award for best white paper.
We should get
people to tweet them. Tweet them to @radix.com, your favourite ever white paper.
I think another factor in this is that bottom of funnel content is about product. It's about product and services. And it's become really unfashionable to talk about your product. And, you know, the whole prevailing ethos is you don't talk about yourself. You know, you just talk about things your audience is interested in. And so, you know, it's become bad to sell and that you shouldn't be selling. But, you know, you've got to assume that your audience is somebody who has a need, and that need can be fulfilled by your product. And so they need to know about your product.
I mean, the CMI literally said to us, didn't it? The content marketing is to do with your customers' interests outside what your product or service can fulfill.
Absolutely.
And I'm like,
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about it. I know. Maybe I'm just strange, but I'm not sure about the top of the funnel content being sexier. We'll come to my bottom of the funnel example in a minute, but it gives me all kinds of feelings.
Okay.
For a piece of marketing content, I love it quite an unreasonable amount.
I've just to kind of go with why there's been this weird, it is a disconnect though, because at the end of the day, everyone's doing all these marketing efforts because somebody wants to sell something. And obviously previously in the past, like, stuff has been really salesy. Like before content marketing certainly became super popular, everything was just kind of like, buy the thing, here's the thing, buy the thing, here's the thing, you want the thing, this is our thing, have our thing, please have the thing, buy the thing. And it's just kind of like, well, we kind of moved away from that, or a lot of people did, certainly in B2B. But then we've kind of broken the funnel a bit. So you've got all that top thing, and then the bottom of it's kind of like over here, and they're kind of separated because you're not encouraged necessarily for a lot of, certainly if you were focusing on a lot of regular content marketing efforts at the moment, you wouldn't be focusing on sort of nurturing people down there to the lower part of the funnel, and you're creating this disconnect.
I think it's an interesting thing. I think, you know, when we talk about the funnel, you know, in the intro you were talking about the sales and marketing funnel. The sales and marketing funnels, they're not the same thing necessarily, are they?
I suppose part of the thing is that was it making marketers realize that the bottom of the funnel is sexy again, and that you do want to do stuff for it and help sales do their job? Is that what needs to happen to repair the two sides and bring it closer?
It's kind of, Fiona, where do you think the marketing funnel and the sales funnel are different? Where do you think?
Where's the handover?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, different people have got different opinions of where the handover point is. But in my mind, always, when we're talking about the funnel, I'm always thinking about the marketing funnel because we're generally working with marketing people within our client organizations. And to me, the bottom of the marketing funnel is where it's the content that you put to persuade somebody to make a decision to put your product or service on the shortlist. So they've become aware that they've got a business issue because through your top of funnel awareness content, you've given them some advice on generally how to tackle that business issue through your middle of funnel content. And now you're going to say, we have a product, we have a service that will help you overcome that business issue, and here's some content about it. And so it's content that's specifically about your product or your service that will get somebody to say, yes, I'm going to put that on my shortlist and we're going to evaluate that.
Does that include the content that they refer to when they're making that decision from the shortlist? Or is that something that you would see more as sales enablement and kind of post-marketing funnel?
Well, I guess it depends on what kind of organization you've got and what kind of product or service that you're selling. So I guess if you look at something like a cloud-based software company, you don't really have a sales force as such. You know, the product is there to buy. You know, you just sign up to buy it on the website. Mm-hmm. And so the content is there to, well, almost sell the product. So it's not really to hand over to sales. It's just to help the buyer decide that this is a product I'm going to look at and maybe eventually
I've
buy.
I've got an example of that.
Go on then.
Can we jump
into your example? Because we decided before recording that we'd each pick an example of kind of like approaches to both of you. And I've gone with still industry darling Slack, because Slack has a free trial model, which you don't have to enter any card details for, which makes it stand out from quite a few SaaS offerings. So you have a free level, which is unlimited. You get unlimited users, but there are some limits elsewhere on it. So you've got things like you've only got 10,000 messages across the entire setup that you create. So that's with all the different channels that people can be talking to. The only archives 10,000 whilst on the free level. And you can only integrate 10 apps or services, which are what control a lot of the bots and like automated things that can happen within it. So we've currently filled ours up with, because we've been having fun with it. There's a couple of GIF ones in there. I added if this, then that for a couple of things, because that can actually do multiple things within itself. But you still have access to things like the native apps and stuff, and you can do some two-person video and voice calls. It's got limited kind of like file storage for the entire team. So like if we were sharing files on it directly, there's like 5 gigabytes is the limit, which depending on the size of the team, like small business like us, you won't notice that very quickly. If you're a bigger business, you certainly would. And you've got things like two-factor authentication as well.
So is that like a freemium model that you can keep using the basic level forever? Or is it that you have these 10,000 messages, and then when the 10,000 messages are
it's forever. So like it's at any one time across the platform, because you can search within it for different messages and various granularities and stuff. You could like search for everything one person has said across a whole load of channels, or search for specific top keywords that have been mentioned. But at any one time, the window it's looking at is the most recent 10,000 messages. So if you've sent 20,000 messages over the time that you've had this set up, it will only access that most recent 10,000.
So if I sit there and type 10,000 different messages, eventually I'll be able to expunge all of our colleagues' B-movie puns from the archive.
It's going to take you a long time. Yeah, a lot of B-movie puns.
It would be worth it.
Terrible things, guys, happened on our Slack when I introduced it for trials. There were memes and there was B-movie involved. The memes have kind of stuck around. B-movie rears its ugly head every now and then. Thankfully, the guys moved it onto private channels.
We need a whole Barry B. Benson channel.
And then obviously because they've only got Slack available for teams at the moment, they're currently working on an enterprise model, but that's fine. And then they've got their standard and plus, which obviously that's when you start paying. And then as soon as you get to like the to plus, it's like then it's all the message archives, it's all the apps and integrations you want, and a couple of other things. And then it's like plus, it's like all the support you can imagine and a couple of other sort of like features that if you're paying something like, what was it? So how much do you try and pay per month? So it's like if you were billing annually, it's like $12.50 a month for like their highest version at the moment per user.
Okay, so at that stage, so you've got the kind of freemium offering,
and it does a lot.
How's the content and the copy there? Are they kind of going,
because
they've got all these support docs
publicly available before you even subscribe, where you can just be like, oh, I'm going to try out this thing, or I'm going to try out that thing. There's a lot that encourages experimentation that makes you quickly think, 10 apps or integrations, that's not going to be enough, or 10,000 messages isn't going to be enough. Because if you think about it, if you've got all those apps and integrations and they're automatically posting things into those Slack channels, those are going towards your message count as well. So you could quickly, with a reasonably sized team, actually sort of like realize, no, we do need to start paying for this, because we won't be able to get all of the stuff out of it, because there's so much we can do and there's so much we're already doing, but we're going to lose it and stuff. And it can quickly fill up. I mean, we haven't been using it extensively as our main means of like communication with the office, which I think is why we haven't hit any limits so far, despite the B-movie stuff. But I'm sure, like, you know, Ben, Steve, George, Kieran, I'm naming the worst of friends.
It's when the B puns started. So that's cool, and it's interesting the way that they use the content and the support content rather than it being sales content or something in order to kind of make it indispensable and just make it useful.
I think part of it is because they're very geeky in like their branding and stuff. A lot of the protocols and stuff that they use are based off of old internet relay chat profilings, which some people probably have never even used. Most people, in fact, will never have used IRC. I actually do use IRC as a geek.
And some people will only ever use IRC.
And some people only ever use it. And in fact, you can integrate Slack and IRC if you really want to. You could have an IRC channel for your company and integrate it with Slack, and it tells you how to do that if you really want to on your free model, as long as you're within the amount of app integrations and stuff going on.
So this is technical content, really?
Technical content, because it's currently basing its... I mean, it could change once it figures out what it's doing for its enterprise model, because it is currently your team can go grab this. IT doesn't need to be involved, because it doesn't, well, until you start hooking up with things like where your files are, it doesn't necessarily involve any internal systems, because obviously you could hook it up with like your Dropbox or your Google Drive or whatever you're using for file storage. And a couple of other internal things like that, and other like some popular kind of like CRM systems and stuff.
That's really interesting, because you know Slack's this sort of, you know, new mega Silicon Valley, you know, tech industry darling, and the thing that you're talking about is in terms of how they're using the content at that end of the funnel, apart from the free trial, is has so much in common with the really, really old school Bofu content example that I've got.
Aha!
Segue.
Yeah, I know. I know, it's crazy. So can I jump in with that one? Yeah. So, dear listener, you can't see, I have in front of me one of my favorite documents in the world, and it's a big, fat product catalog.
It's exceptionally sizable.
It is. Here it is. It's actually made from paper. Can you imagine that paper? Look. Can you hear that? All of those pages. I mean, it is a weighty thing. And God bless Maxon Motor for posting me one just because I asked, because God knows what the postage is on one of these. My arm is aching just lifting it up. There, if you can work out how many pages that is, tweet your guesses at RadixCom.
We'll give you a copy of our board game Funnel if you get the right number of pages.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are expensive to mail. So the thing, shout out to Maxon Motor, who I worked with in a previous life, the previous job. And Maxon are a Swiss company, and they make, give or take, the best small electric motors in the whole world. You know, these are the motors you use for things that must never, ever break, or things that are small but must still be extraordinarily powerful. So they get used in Formula One cars and Mars rovers and undersea oil things, that, you know, stuff that you put it out there, and, you know, the cost of it breaking is much higher than the cost of having one motor slightly better than another. But the thing is that for years and years, the problem that you have when you make a motor that's 40 centimeters long and is electric and you plug it into a device is that all of the buyers for these motors in the device companies, it's not all NASA, you know, it's still people that, you know, that make the CDs come out, you know, come out of the front of your car stereo and stuff. All of these buyers are targeted on discount and on price. And if they just get a specification that says the motor's got to be this much voltage or whatever, and it's got to be 40 centimeters by 2 centimeters, that's the size of the gap, they will go for the cheapest thing they can get, because that's what they're targeted on. And if you are a Swiss-based company selling the best electric motors in the world, you are going to get rinsed by cheap Far Eastern companies every single time. So what Maxon do is really, really clever. And that's that they don't particularly target the buyers. They target the design engineers who are designing the products, right? And that's where this catalogue comes in. This is a thick document, and over time, the balance has changed. But I remember the first, when I used to deal with it, these, you know, 10 years ago or something, kind of the first 50-odd pages.
So no, it's more than 50.
Yeah, oh, way more. The first 50-odd pages have virtually no product information at all. I have no list of products, no here's why you should buy one of these. There's a couple of pages at the start. But basically, you come into this section called the Maxon Selection Guide. And it is all formulas and graphs and conversion tables and things to work out the very, very best combination of motor, controller, and gearhead for your application. Because a design engineer, these guys deal with motors all the time, and a design engineer is only going to deal with a motor once every 6 months. I'll probably, you know, forget the formula. So this document, it goes and sits on their shelf until it's read there, until they're ready to look at it again. And it's this stuff that is really, really useful. And then when you look at the, go into the sections, you look at the pages, you know, they have all the, you know, nominal voltage, loads, no load speed, no load current, nominal speed. So it's got all of the torque for every single variation. There are millions of variations, and it's just tables of data. Now, if you're an engineer, this stuff's really, really handy. And what this used to have, I assume it's all online now, because there isn't one in here, and it used to even come with a DVD-ROM inside the front cover, with all the CAD drawings for all of the products, just to make it easy to pick it up and drop it into your design. Because the beauty of it is, if you know that you need a certain amount of torque, and you allow for a motor that's only 3 centimeters long to produce this amount of torque and work at that temperature with that degree of vibration or whatever, suddenly the specification that you send to the buyer isn't, it's got to be this big and it's got to be this big, it's got to do this much, it's got to be this powerful, it's got to be this robust, and it's got to do this. And suddenly their field of competitors goes from the entire world to about 3 companies, all of whom charge about as much as they do. But that targeting is all to do with helping people to select the best possible product for the thing that they want to do, and to make it really, really easy. And it's that thing that you have with your Slack example about your Bofu content being helpful, helping people to understand how to use and integrate the product or service, and making it indispensable. That was my example anyway. And I don't suggest that all the listeners, you know, that every listener request a paper copy.
I think it'd be a bit unfair on
that. Would be unfair on Maxon, but there is a link to a soft copy online. So we'll put that in the show notes, and you'll see quite how much detail. Did I mention at the end of every different product section, they just have a space for your notes? They literally have a blank page for you to put your notes in at intervals throughout here, so you know you can actually, you know, and there's graph paper and stuff just in the catalogue.
So useful.
Yeah, and that's the point of it. And that's why, yeah, it's a product catalogue. It's full of product. The second half, two-thirds of it, whatever, plus, is product. Fact. All the way through. But without ever being, apart from the first few pages, and it seems to increase by a couple of pages every year, but it's not buy our shiny thing. Look at our shiny thing. Buy our shiny thing. It's just, here it is. Here's how you choose the right one. You know, and engineers love that.
Yeah. It's that thing of just knowing who your buyer is and knowing who your customer is and producing something for them, not something that, even if it's a product catalogue, it's not shouting about them. It's here's what's useful for you as the buyer or the user of the product.
Because engineers hate feeling marketed to.
Yeah.
But Fiona.
Yes. So I picked as an example some case studies because this is something that we've talked about before on the podcast about how case studies are a particularly unloved area of, B2B content generally, but definitely an unloved area of bottom of the funnel content. And it's the kind of content you think ought to be absolutely crucial. You know, if you're going to buy something, one of your first questions is, well, who else is using it and what's it doing for them? And so the case study ought to be a really, really important piece of content for you to show who else, like you, is using this product. And they just get so abused, don't they? And so, you know, all we need is like 3 bullet points of the challenge, the solution, the results, and everything's just reduced to these like inhumane bullet points.
And you get people going, do you have to talk to the customer?
Yes, exactly. And sometimes like, oh no, let's not interview the customer, you know, let's just write it up.
I've
read from what we know
several times online, designers who are very heavily involved in case studies all the time, they don't like bullet points.
No,
I'm just going to put that there. designers hate bullets.
I don't mind a bullet. I'm just putting it out there. You know, that shows me as a writer, not a designer, but I don't mind one. I think they could be helpful. Sorry,
so,
carry on.
So I think case studies are really ripe for a makeover, and you know, it's really nice when you see them done properly. And so that's why I've chosen the video case studies that Xero, the cloud accounting software company, do. I love Xero. I mean, it can do no wrong in my opinion. I love the product. I love the way on the website. Site, they know exactly who they're talking to. They know they're talking to small businesses. They're talking in particular to business owners. They're also talking to accountants and bookkeepers. They keep the two things separate because they know their audience. But they do everything right as far as I'm concerned, but especially in their case studies, because the case study does everything that we would always say a good case study should do. So it puts the customer at the front and center of the story. It makes the customer the hero. The customers in all of the cases are small business owners, and Xero just let these people tell their story, and just like their excitement about their own business, I hate the word passion, but you know, their passion about their own business and why they set it up and what they're trying to do, that comes across. And then Xero comes in just in the sense that these people would rather be spending time on their business and spending time doing their accounts. And so it's like, here's Xero. It just makes it really easy for us to do our accounts. And so we don't have to spend much time doing that. We can spend all our time, you know, making artisanal peanut butter, or, you know, serving people in our vegetarian cafe, or, you know, running our plumbing business, you know, the stuff that we really like doing. And that's the way a case study should be. It should show the customer, make them the hero, tell their story, and then just really kind of show how the product supports them in doing what they want to do. So I love those video case studies, and they look really nice. There's a lot of, you know, good production effort gone into them. Yes, I, for anybody that wants to see what a good case study looks like, then go to Xero's website and look at those videos.
We'll try and put a link in the blog post to go with this episode.
Yeah. I mean, they're great. And you identify with the business owner, don't you? You sort of go, I want to buy stuff from them.
Yes, and you know, and as a business owner myself, you know, you just feel a kind of kinship. And I think this is another good point, actually, because, you know, we kind of think of bottom of the funnel content as like rational content, like appealing to reason. Like, yeah, it's the thing you use to justify the emotional decision you've made further up the funnel, you know. But, you know, those case study videos, they sort of have an emotional resonance as well. It's like you identify with this person and you like feel excited about their business, and then it makes you feel excited about your business. And, you know, there's an emotional appeal to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, anyone that's done selling will tell you, you know, it's just a gut thing. People just have to feel comfortable, you know, in at a gut level. And yeah, totally, it's a really great example.
Okay, so if you were going to give us a tip or two about writing great BoFu content, what would your tip or tips be?
So a couple of tips, very quickly. So the first one would be to answer questions that you know your audience or your buyer has. And the other one would be to just show them how your product or how your service works in the real world, you know, how it solves problems like the ones that you know they have.
David?
I think, you know, it is to remember, you know, the lessons of content marketing, even though we're thinking about the end of the time. You know, they say help, don't sell. Well, maybe help as well as sell. But it isn't, as we were saying, because you're nearer the end of the funnel, it isn't buy our shiny thing, buy it. You know, it is helping people to make the right decision. It is, and as part of that, you've got to understand who is your customer, the people who would be genuinely better off buying your stuff, and understand who's not your customer. You don't really want to persuade anybody that shouldn't be buying your thing to buy it. You know, and so it is about making the content valuable, making it helpful in their decision-making process. Even if that's just to get you shortlisted, and then, you know, maybe you then have salespeople to do their thing after that.
That's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com.
Yeah, come and tweet at us and tell us. I want to know your guesses on how many pages are in this document.
And you'll find our website at rannox-communications.com, where you can sign up for a monthly email for the latest copywriting tips and insights.